Hi, and thank you for joining me today for this edition of Senior Talk. Today, we're discussing Medicare Advantage plans, and some very concerning information has come to light. My guest is Dan Adcock, Director of Government Relations and Policy at the National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare. If you're a regular listener, you know I love them. The National Committee is a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization that acts in the interest of its membership through advocacy, education, services, grassroots efforts, and the leadership of the Board of Directors and professional staff. The work of the National Committee is directed towards developing better informed citizens and voters. Membership is just $12 a year. It's the best bang for your buck when you're looking for accurate information that impacts older adults. And you can visit their website at www.ncpssm.org. And I will give that address again. And as if the National Committee wasn't already terrific, they've added a new page to the website that you should check out. Aging, health, and care. Look under the resources tab on the homepage and you'll see it. It comes right up. There's good information on caregiving, dental, hearing, vision care, as well as advice on Medicare and Medicare Advantage plans. Hi, Dan. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Well, thanks for having me, Carol. I appreciate it.
It's really great to have you here. So this is unsettling and aggravating, to say the least. The Health and Human Services Inspector General's report recently indicated that Medicare Advantage plans are sometimes withholding care for beneficiaries, even though this care meets original Medicare, also known as Medicare fee-for-service, coverage rules. So there, even though Medicare says pay this, they're not. It's really hard for me to wrap my head around this, especially since I just enrolled in a Medicare Advantage plan last month. And so now I'm having a little bit of a worry moment. In Maine, about one third of Medicare beneficiaries are enrolled in an Advantage plan. So this is a three-part question. How was this discovered? How prevalent is it? And what does it mean for beneficiaries?
Well, unfortunately, Carol, it's very prevalent. It's an ongoing problem that has been identified in the past. So what this is based on a report by the Department of Health and Human Services Inspector General that they put out last month. And they found, based on their sampling, that in 2019 alone, 85,000 beneficiaries from across the country had their prior authorizations improperly denied. And so, again, it was exactly like what you had described it. And that is that if these beneficiaries were in a traditional Medicare fee-for-service plan and they were going to go get an MRI or whatever they needed that their doctor deemed as medically necessary, then traditional Medicare would cover it. But Medicare Advantage is in a completely different animal. It's more like what people may be used to if they had a managed care health plan through their employer when they were 64 or younger. What happens with these managed care plans, and this is also true of Medicare Advantage, is they're called, the way they are paid by Medicare is done in a capitated way. That means that these plans get a fixed amount of money to treat a certain number of beneficiaries. So the plans make more money if they deliver less care. And so it's in their interest to try to deny people care even when they really need it. But obviously, that's a huge problem. And a lot of Medicare beneficiaries who are looking at some of the advantages of Medicare Advantage plans, and there are some because you don't have to get a Medigap plan, a wraparound supplemental. And sometimes they do provide some additional benefits that traditional Medicare does not provide. What you're giving up in exchange is you're surrendering your right to have a doctor determine what is medically necessary for you.
So there is so much to unpack. So first of all, can they do that? Aren't they under contract with Medicare to do what Medicare? Is this even legal, or are they just trying to fly under the radar and make more money?
Well, I think they're trying to use the system to make as much money as they can. If they get caught, you know, that's an issue. I mean, the other thing that's open to Medicare beneficiaries and that your listeners definitely should know about if they are on Medicare Advantage plans and they find themselves in a position where their care has been denied, is they can appeal. And the sad thing is only a tiny fraction of people in Medicare Advantage plans even appeal their cases. But most of these appeals are actually on appeal most of these denials are overturned. So people do get their care. But, you know, there's just a lot of people that don't know this is a right that they have or don't want to go through the red tape of having to try to appeal one of these cases. This is something that, you know, has been an issue with managed care plans across the board, whether they're in Medicare or whether they're one that's provided by an employer through their employees.
I want to ask you this first, and then I'm going to ask about the appeals process and how labor intensive it is. I don't understand the reasoning of an insurance company. I know they want to make money, and they should. Everybody has a right to make money. But I don't understand the reasoning behind if your provider says you need an MRI and the insurance company says get an X-ray first, which they're going to pay for, which is going to show they probably need the MRI, they're paying twice for something they would have just paid for once if they'd listened to the provider. The provider's right. Not going to do an MRI if it's not warranted. So why do they think that adding on levels of service is a good idea?
Well, I mean, I think that sometimes they think, and there are some instances of this, is that, you know, providers are ordering tests that are unnecessary or imaging that's unnecessary. And so I think their feeling is that because an X-ray is far less expensive than an MRI, then let's start with that. And maybe that's all the person needs. But I think you're right. I think in most cases, what the X-ray shows is that it doesn't show enough and somebody needs an MRI. So you're right. I mean, it's an additional expense. It's a fraction of what an MRI is, but it's still something that the plan has to pay for.
So I wanted to talk about the appeals process because, as you said, so many people don't know that they have one. So let's say someone needs an MRI, their Medicare Advantage plan has said, no, get an X-ray first. What do they do if they want, or if they've been denied completely, what do they do? How do they appeal it? Do they appeal it with Medicare or with their plan?
Well, my understanding is they appeal with their plan. When they get the explanation of benefits in which their care has been not denied, they're given instructions about how to appeal the particular case. And so that's how they do it. I'm not as familiar with how long it takes, and that obviously could be an issue too. If it takes a long time and something is needed right away, then obviously that's a huge problem too.
That would be a big problem. Time can be of the essence in certain things. And so going through this could be dangerous.
Right.
So are Medicare Advantage plans allowed to pick and choose what they want to cover and impose limitations on people, even though original Medicare covers more?
They are. And like I say, you know, they'll try to get the plans, the Medicare Advantage plans will try to get away with these denials of care. And the only recourse, again, that the beneficiaries have is to appeal it. I mean, they can also report these denials of care to the Department of Health and Human Services Inspector General. And I think a lot of those reports has led to these cases where the Inspector General has looked into these denials of care. So, you know, obviously greater political, you know, and I think the other thing is that there has been legislation introduced that would assist Medicare beneficiaries in ensuring that their care would not be denied, that would make it easier to get a prior authorization. There's some issues with the legislation that we have with it that we want to make it more beneficiary friendly, in that, you know, if this legislation were to go on, in theory, it could drive up beneficiary costs in the form of higher premiums or copays. And so we want to make sure if that were to happen, that cost is not passed along to the beneficiary, that the insurance company has to absorb that cost.
There certainly are, as you said, advantages to a Medicare Advantage plan. There is some vision, some dental. Traditional Medicare, while it covers a lot, that 80-20 split can get expensive if you're doing that 20% yourself. So, but it feels like if the plans are just going to deny some of what your provider thinks, that is an enormous issue. So what should someone do? It's a double-edged sword.
Well, that's why, you know, we try to do our best to educate our members on, you know, going into this transaction with our eyes wide open, that they understand what they're getting themselves into. You know, not only are we talking about plans that can deny people care, but it also has a much limited provider network. So in traditional Medicare, you know, there's sometimes people will complain about not every doctor takes Medicare, and that's true. But it's still the network of doctors that are available in traditional Medicare is usually much better than private health plans like Medicare Advantage. You can go to the Mayo Clinic. You can go to the Cleveland Clinic. You can go to these centers of excellence to get treated for cancer or whatever the case may be. And that may not necessarily be true with a Medicare Advantage plan. And so there's big advantages of it. The other issue that I think that we try to educate our members about is that there's a lot of younger Medicare beneficiaries that are drawn to Medicare Advantage plans because they look at the cons of Medicare Advantage plans and say, well, my doctor's in their network, so that's really all I care about, you know. But what frequently happens is they turn 70 or 75 or 80, and all of a sudden they need to go to an oncologist that's not in the network. And so then they say, well, okay, well, what I'll do now is I'll switch over to traditional Medicare and I can see that person. The catch on that, though, is that when you first become eligible for Medicare, there's a very relatively short window of about 6 months where you can get a supplemental Medigap plan without having to worry about pre-existing conditions. But after that period of time goes, and especially if it's like 10 years later and you want to transition into a traditional Medicare plan, then depending on in most states, your pre-existing conditions could mean that you're not able to get a Medigap plan, and then you're stuck with paying that those additional costs that people who don't have a Medigap plan have with traditional Medicare. So that's another con of Medicare Advantage plans, because people aren't necessarily thinking about the long-term implications of being in a Medicare Advantage plan and wanting to switch back to traditional Medicare.
We are going to take a break, and when we come back, we are going to talk about switching back and forth and if someone can actually do that during open enrollment period. Stay with us. We'll be right back with Dan Adcock. Hi, we're back with Senior Talk discussing Medicare Advantage plans. When we left, we talked about switching plans. So when I enrolled in a Medicare Advantage plan recently, I thought, well, if I don't like it, I'll just go back to traditional Medicare when the open enrollment period happens. Can you switch back and forth regardless of how long you've had your Advantage plan? If you think, I just want to go the traditional route, I'm going back.
Well, in most of the United States, you can't. Once you've gone through your initial enrollment, when he was first turned 65. But fortunately, people who live in Maine, in addition to, and Connecticut and Massachusetts and New York, they have state laws that require guaranteed, what's called guaranteed issue of supplemental Medigap plans. That means that regardless of your pre-existing condition, you have a right to be issued a Medigap plan. But, you know, if you live in New Hampshire, you're not going to be as lucky. Same with Vermont, you know, some of the other New England states too. But luckily, Maine is one of those states that had your state legislature and your made a decision long ago to pass legislation that would require guaranteed issues. So that's one of the advantages, amongst others, of living in Maine.
Yes. So if you're 80 years old and you decide that your Medicare Advantage plan just isn't working for you anymore, or the prices have gone up, or your doctor's not in network, whatever reason, and you just decide you want traditional Medicare, you can swap back at that open enrollment period in the fall.
That's right.
Good. You'd still have to have a Medicare Part D plan though, correct?
Well, you don't have to. Medicare Part D is voluntary, like Medicare
That's
Part
true.
D. Yeah. So you can, because there's some people that basically they look at how many prescription drugs their doctor has prescribed them, and they say, well, it's just not really worth it. These drugs are generic. They don't cost that much. So I'm just not going to pay the premium. The problem with that is that there is a penalty if you don't that you have to pay if you don't sign up right when you're 65 for Part D. So that's an issue. So it's probably in the interest of most older people to get into Medicare Part D, because it's, again, one of these situations where, you know, as you age, you're probably going to need more prescription drugs and more costly prescription drugs, especially if they're brand name still under patent. And so having a Medicare Part D prescription drug plan could potentially save you a lot of money in the long run.
So people in Maine, don't worry about it. You can switch back and forth if you need to, or you're having trouble with the plan that you've chosen. So let me ask you this. How would a person know that the services that they really needed, that their provider prescribed for them, they're being denied, how would they know that they are actually covered by original Medicare and that their MA plan has just decided not to because it's too expensive or for whatever reason? How would you even know to even start an appeal?
Well, I mean, you would know, obviously, the trigger for the starting appeal would be the denial, and you would be notified that your care is being denied and then given instructions about how to appeal. So that's how you would know that. But if you want to know whether a service is usually covered under Medicare or not, while it's not the most user-friendly thing to do, to go to the Department of Health and Human Services Medicare website and go through the list of things that are covered under Medicare.
So there on the website, there is a location where you can see all of the services that are covered. So if you're denied a service by your MA plan, you can go right to that website and say, oh, this MRI is covered by Medicare, and then you can start your appeals process.
That's right. Right. Okay. Well, I mean, I think that, you know, I would err on the side of, you know, if you think that it's been, especially if your doctor has said you really need this MRI or whatever, or you really need to go see a specialist, you know, a neurologist or whatever it might be, and the plan has said, no, you can't. Then I would err on the side of people appealing, because again, there's just not enough people that are taking advantage of that option, and most of these appeals are being decided in favor of the beneficiaries.
Would you say that doing the effort to do that appeal also kind of puts a spotlight on what's happening? So if suddenly there are a lot of appeals coming in from people who've been denied, that shines a light on what's actually happening. Is that how this was brought to light?
Yeah, I think that, but I think that in addition to going through the appeal process, reporting these type of wrongful denials to the Inspector General at the Department of Health and Human Services.
Okay. All right. Well, good. So what about the House Select Committee on Aging? Right. Is there oversight of Medicare on all of this, or is
well,
it up to us?
There's two committees in the House that have jurisdiction over Medicare, and that's the House Ways and Means Committee and the House Energy and Commerce Committee. But they also have a full plate of other things under their jurisdiction. And so what's been missing out of that equation is a separate committee just on aging in the House. Back in 1995, when the Republicans took over the House from the Democrats for the first time in 40 years, this is the Newt Gingrich Revolution, when he became Speaker of the House, that House majority did away with the House Select Committee on Aging, which had existed previously for a very long time. In fact, when I was a congressional staffer, I worked on the staff of the House Education and Labor Committee, which had jurisdiction over the Older Americans Act, which I know, Carol, you're very familiar with.
Yes.
And so one of the things that I remember when I was there, and this was before I left in 1993, we were working on the 1992 reauthorization of the Older Americans Act. And while our subcommittee, which had jurisdiction, legislative jurisdiction over the Older Americans Act, I know that the House Aging Committee contributed a lot to our process of writing the new law, because they also held hearings. And so I think that if the House Aging Committee would be to reestablished in the House of Representatives, it would help to increase the number of oversight hearings and hearings that would assist in the writing of legislation that would be important to seniors.
We need to take a break. That is terrific information. When we come back, we do have a little bit of good news. So stand by for that. We'll be right back right after this. The website is www.ncpssm.org. And remember to go under the resources tab of that website and look at the aging, health, and care page. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Hi, we're back with Senior Talk discussing Medicare Advantage plans. And while we've given you a lot to think about, there is some good news afoot. Dan, what's happening that might actually save us money, those of us who pay Medicare premiums?
Well, the good news is that we think that for the 2023 premium, the increase will not be as large as it otherwise would be, because of the fact that there's an Alzheimer's drug that's fairly controversial because of its side effects, and that it's not very effective in most cases. It's called Aduhelm. Originally, at the beginning This year, the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services built into the premium increase, which is very large this year, $20 a month more, that they were going to cover it for everybody. But instead, mid-year, they decided that they were only going to cover it for people in clinical trials. And so that resulted in a significant savings to the Medicare program. And so that savings is going to be passed along to Medicare beneficiaries in the form of a lower and otherwise would have been premium in for Medicare Part B as a Bravo in 2023.
So it looks like maybe $20 a month, maybe it would come down to $10 a month. So it should, if this happens, it should bring the premiums to $160.40 as opposed to the $170.10.
Well, there's a chance that the increase in 2023 may be much lower than that. We'll have to wait and see. I mean, we've heard kind of, these are just guesses at this point, but it could just be very, very minimal, like just a few dollars or so. But the, passing along these savings then will should be a real boost for Medicare beneficiaries.
Well, that's good news, at least. So we have a little time left. I want to talk to you about people who now may be a little rattled, as I am, about Medicare Advantage plans. What should they do? I think a lot of people just jump into them because they are getting a little bit of dental, a little bit of vision. They're, as you said, their doctor's in the network, so it all works out. Should they really investigate this further, even get the help of an area agency on aging or someone who can really investigate? The Medigap plan is not the same, I found out during the break, is not the same as a Medicare Advantage plan. So should they just really investigate all of that?
And I think your suggestion about getting a hold of your local area agency on aging and specifically the state health insurance program counselor, who are they're very unbiased. They're just going to give you good information, and they're going to help. They're going to walk people through every step of everything we've been talking about, and again, go into making these decisions with their eyes wide open, whether they decide on traditional Medicare. Or they're trying to decide on a Medigap plan. And if they are in traditional Medicare, if they can afford a supplemental Medigap plan to wrap around the gaps in traditional Medicare.
Dan Adcock, thank you so much for being here. You are a wealth of information. www.ncpssm.org. Check it out. It's a great website, lots of information. That's it for me. This is Senior Talk.